sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hope you're enjoying everything. Great to have you with us on this Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. Just a couple days before the start of deer season. Big shopping day today. Hope you're able to find all the deals you wanted. And if you're somebody who decided to lay back and wait for later, believe me, there's plenty of deals between now and 6 o'clock December 24th. And I know friends, by the way, that take it to the wire. Now, then there's the Kevin Herr method, where he plays in a golf tournament with his esteemed partner, moi. We end up winning one of the flights. We all get gift certificates. Kevin last year went out, sent me this beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club golf shirt, which I love. It's about as comfortable a shirt as I've ever worn. Only to find out later that he had his heart in the right place. His execution, though, was a little askew. He actually used my certificate to buy the shirt. He says, I'll never live that down. I know you won't live it down. It's all right. It's a great story. It's funny. And I thank the world of Kev and get him back in here next week. All right. Today's show being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. You get to a weekend like this. I mean, in fact, look at this entire holiday season. Right now we have Hanukkah, which began on Wednesday night. Hanukkah stretching into next week. You have, this is the Thanksgiving weekend, along with the opening day of deer season coming up. So we're right in the middle of Thanksgiving weekend. Then we have Christmas coming up. And then we have New Year's coming up. You need to stock up. And the one place to do all your stocking up to make sure you're taken care of during the holidays is Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Beverages, I mentioned beer. What a wide array, selection of domestics. And, of course, they also have great snacks. The Pickle Bar and Fresh Hot Roasted Peanuts. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I am safely ensconced in what Jack Ham has nicknamed the Chateau. When Jack was in here looking around, he goes, you're broadcasting from the Chateau. This is amazing. He's the one that nicknamed it, and Jack will be here in a few moments. But our thanks to Sunbury Motors, because it doesn't happen without them. This is the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We bring in my outstanding broadcast partner of the last 14 seasons, and we're looking to stretch it to 15, 16, and beyond. There's no announcer in the country in football that has it easier than I do because of him. Jack, welcome. And I think we're going to see two of the top receivers in the country, and definitely the top two in the Big Ten head-to-head, Allen Robinson of Penn State and Jared Aberderis for Wisconsin. Feels like Aberderis is a 10-year veteran there. Jack, when you've watched him, what makes Aberderis a real threat outside of this great ground game that Wisconsin has?
He is a complete football player, and he's got, I think 66 catches here right now, and did a great job against an outstanding corner against Ohio State and Roby, and he just used him all day long. And Roby probably got better athletic skills, but Aberderis knew how to get open. Like I said, reads defenses on the run, and you're right, it just seems like he's been there a long time. But you got to just respect a guy like that, and how he, in his career, he just, the talents he has, and he has used them to the utmost.
No question, and he's just an outstanding punt returner. He just has not only a natural feel in the pass game, but he has a natural feel in that area where feel, to me, is all important.
Oh, he's a guy that he's almost like a coach on the field, because he's always making the right decisions out there, and that's what you have to do as a punt return man. I mean, know when to call for the fair catch. Know when you realize you have an opportunity to make a big play on a punt return, and he does that. So he's one of those players that you just got to admire. And I think he'll get his opportunity in the pros, and he'll work at it and get better and better. And just good decision making in special teams and as a wide receiver. And every once in a while, he will run with the football on those reverses as well. So I mean, one of those guys you just love when you're playing against him, you hate him. And but if he's on your football team, you just love what he's able to contribute to his team.
When you look, you played in a 4-3 scheme, and it appeared to be a semi-decent defense. But
thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome. This is a 3-4 scheme. What's important against a 3-4 scheme as to how you attack that as opposed to a 4-3, Jack?
Well, I think, first of all, for the offensive line, it's recognition. I mean, you really have to recognize this for the inside guys, what offensive lineman is going to the second level to get the inside linebackers. At times, you can they can drop down and they can go to a 4-3 as well. They can be versatile in a sense in pass rushing as well. This team is a solid football team. Our offensive line recognition, because you get blitzes sometimes off the edges from different people. You got to recognize all of that. I think for the offensive line, I think the mental part of that, because, 4-3, you kind of know where people are going to be for the most part all the time. In a 3-4 defense, you've got those four linebackers just running to the football. And Borland is a guy, there's another tackling machine out there in that defense for Wisconsin, because he just gets the football, he makes plays. Now, there's another guy who's a smart player on the field for you defensively, always in the right position. I mean, you're going to have to make good plays to beat him, and he's that type of a linebacker. A little bit nicked up here, I think, early in the year. It seems to be back relatively healthy right now, but it's going to be the recognition for our offensive line, which we haven't seen for a while in that 3-4.
Is it any coincidence that we've seen Penn State play better defense in the month of November to coincide with the health at linebacker and, in particular, the health of Mike Hull?
Oh, without a doubt. I think Mike Hull getting healthy and Alanian on the other side starting to really make an impact as a defensive end. He drops off in the zone blitz. He can rush the passer. We saw him at the sack and fumble recovery in the game last week, which was a huge play in the game. He understands the quickness and getting off the edge. He's also been a really good help on a bubble screen. They're coming down the line, reading and reacting to them. A lot of times when they get turned back inside, it's those defensive ends and defensive tackles who are coming flat down the line who can help out on those bubble screens and, again, really can make an impact when those wide receivers start coming toward the middle of the field. So I think Hull getting to the point where he's still not 100%, but he's got that burst. We saw that a couple of weeks ago on a bubble screen, starting to make more plays. Made a play on the goal line with I thought it was going to be a fumble at Nebraska ended up recovering. But, the combination of Hall and I think Alanian coming on the way he has made this defense much better. And I also think the fact of Amos going back to corner has also helped as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that you and I have always felt that was the natural spot for him.
Exactly, Steve. Because it's a very, very difficult thing to learn on the run. It takes a while to learn not only the angles on the passing game that downfield and where and get to the point where the ball and the receiver at the same time, but also on running plays. Safety is not accounted for in the running scheme, and so if a safety can read, and we had a great one here at Pittsburgh that I played, a guy named Mike Wagner,
yep.
Another smart guy. You're like an almost another linebacker up there on a sweep or plays in outside that you are up there making plays. If you read, you don't take a false step. You read the offensive lineman, and you're up in the line of scrimmage making plays. So that's you learn it on the run. You learn that by not in a film room, but really in a game type situation. And I think it's uncomfortable for Amos back there, and I think he's now very comfortable going back and just playing corner.
There's another part to that. We talked about Alanian's movement around the line of scrimmage. What has that meant, that joker role? Because obviously he has the mobility that you can put him in different spots and try to account for him.
Well, that's the point of where you use your personnel well.
Yeah.
Because not a lot of defensive linemen can do that. I mean, they drop off, and a lot of times they do that, and the guy's a statue back there in the secondary where you throw the ball 1 foot away from him, and it's going to be a completion. Alanya, he's athletic enough out there, and which surprises me of how athletic he really is, and making plays in space, staying home on reverses when plays go away from him. He plays well in space, and he's not a huge defensive end, and I think the athletic ability has really helped him. And you know what? Like a lot of players, he's starting to get a feel for it. He knows how people are trying to attack him. He knows what an offensive lineman is trying to do against him. He's pretty good, like I said, in space when in dropping into the zones as well. Realizes reverses. Realizes when the quarterback is faking the dive play and comes trying to get outside of containment. So you got to, you know, again, another guy who's just gotten better as the year's going on.
Christian Hackenberg on the other side. We've watched the early maturation of an 18-year-old quarterback from square one to now. He obviously came in with some really impressive tools. Where have you and I watched him grow?
Well, one place I've watched him grow, and I think as a freshman, you wouldn't think that would be the case. He does a good job of being patient, staying in that pocket. And he's got a lot of ability with that arm of his and thinks he can get the football out there. And so he waits a lot of times, not like a normal freshman. Normal freshman getting traffic around him in that pocket, you'd think you'd bail out it, try to escape and get outside the pocket. He has hung in there a lot of times, sometimes taking a shot, but delivering the ball downfield. He's really patient in the pocket. And, again, he's going to make – mistakes out there, like he's trying to throw up over the defensive back the other day, ends up being tipped for an interception. I thought he could have run with the football decision in the overtime, where I thought he would end up getting the first down when Robinson was covered downfield. But this year for him has been invaluable in the sense of the experience he has gotten against quality teams, the Ohio States out there, Nebraska's, and so forth, playing against their defenses. Plus, you know, he is accurate throwing the football, especially when he is rolling out to that right side. Got a couple double levels over there, hit the tight ends last week. Got a great touch and feel for it with Robinson coming back to the football on the outside. So, I mean, you could talk about watching from the bench with a clipboard as a freshman and learning from the sideline, but nothing like being out there and when the guys are coming around you in a pocket and getting that kind of experience, and which will just help him so much going into next year.
The importance through all of this, and I mentioned earlier, 45 scholarship guys played against Nebraska. For Bill O'Brien, in what should be the low moment in all of this, because now some scholarships are coming back, and then we'll see about the bowl thing later. Do I have identified his franchise quarterback now? What does that mean in the building process for him down the road?
Oh, that is, it's huge, Steve. I mean, it's a situation where you see some of these teams, they go through the entire season, they are going back and forth with one quarterback to another and whatever. I mean, there has been no question from day one since Hackenberg set foot on this campus that Bill O'Brien realized that he was the number one guy. I've talked to him a number of times and talking about how much of a sponge he is in the sense of trying to take in all the things. And then they've got a great rapport. And I think you need to have that with your head coach and your quarterback, especially the reputation O'Brien has for working with quarterbacks. So this is something for Hackenberg to be the focal point of this offensive football team going forward here for the next three or some odd years, if he stays that long, is huge. And then you work around it. We're going to have a set of running backs next year that should be outstanding again. I mean, recruiting will be down the road, but once you've named your starting quarterback and really your starting quarterback for quite a while, I mean, that goes a long way to getting your offense in gear.
And Bill wants balance, obviously, with what he's doing. I mean, if he feels he has to call a bunch of running plays to do it and score, he'll do it. If he has to call pass plays, he'll do it. Penn State has won 33 of the last 37 games in which they've had a 100-yard rusher. Now, that did not obviously fall into place this last time. It was an overtime game. But when you hear 33 of the last 37, you have a 100-yard rusher winning. What does that tell you in this day of video football about the value of a running game?
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, the value of a running game, I mean, it's been huge for us. And you're right. I think we wasted a couple of good opportunities in the last couple of weeks with Zwinak really controlling the tempo of the game, but with the offensive line. I mean, all of a sudden, I know it's Purdue, but still, all of a sudden, when you end up running the football so effectively, your third down conversion, all of a sudden, which would have been horrible for Penn State, all of a sudden they spiked big time. And the running game, I've got to give credit, this offensive line in probably the last month or so has really gotten into a groove themselves. And I think maybe a lot of it has to do also with Zwinak as well. Zwinak not fumbling the football, holding on to the football, the effort that he has had on every play. And I mean, we've seen every play where he's dragging somebody, trying to run somebody over. I mean, the combination of those two things, I think, is why this running game has worked so well in the last number of weeks. Plus, that really helps that play action thing where Hackenberg ended up, you know, walking into the end zone with no containment last week. That kind of, when you run the football that effectively, that play action or boot fake by Hackenberg, those kind of things open up because the defense has to overreact to a guy like Zwinak and the offensive line. So it's a domino effect. Anytime you can run the football, it just opens everything up for you offensively and makes it actually a pretty easy day for a quarterback.
Jack, as always, my friend, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We will see you Friday.
You've got it, Steve. Take care and have a great Thanksgiving.
You too, Jack. Jack Ham, my broadcast partner for the past 14 seasons. Can you believe that, 14 years? Well, maybe to some of the listeners, they're like, I've listened to Jones for 14 long years. I hope you're not saying that. I hope you're saying, gee, it's been a short time. We've really enjoyed you guys. So we're hoping you say. But you can't be any luckier than to work with him and to work with Dick Girardi. Wow. Penn State basketball, by the way, is coming up tonight. St. John's at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. The other game's underway right now. They just started the first game, Ole Miss and Georgia Tech. Two winners then meet tomorrow. Two teams then on the losing side meet in the consolation game tomorrow. And then Penn State plays Pitt in the ACC Challenge game, which will be Tuesday night at 7:30, and Tuesday will be on beginning at 7, and I'll be back on basketball duty as of Tuesday. I've got football duty leaving tonight for Madison, and then on to basketball after that. So somebody came up to Bill O'Brien on the Monday talk show at Damon's, just off the air. We were getting ready to tape something else that we needed to do. And they said, is it going to be cold in Madison? And Bill looks at him and goes, it's Wisconsin. In November, on Thanksgiving weekend. Yes, it's going to be cold in Madison, Wisconsin on Thanksgiving weekend. You know, unless the climate change is affected much more than I ever even realized, it's going to be cold in Madison, Wisconsin, without a doubt. Next half hour, first of all, I want to thank Josh Moyer, ESPN.com, for joining us in the opening half hour. Hall of Fame corner, Lem Barney, who joined us in the second half hour. My Hall of Fame broadcast partner, Jack Ham, who just joined us moments ago. In the final half hour, we're going to look back at a watershed moment in the history of the Big Ten. It's 40 years ago, Michigan and Ohio State. It was the 1973 game where Ohio State and Michigan were tied, undefeated, and the winner would go to the Rose Bowl representing the Big Ten. Except the game ended in a tie in the pre-overtime days. What to do? The athletic directors voted 6-4 and shocked Michigan by sending Ohio State. Actually surprised Ohio State, too. John Bacon, who wrote the book Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football, is also a Michigan football historian. He's going to join us here in the Sunbury Motors studio to talk about that watershed moment because it really changed everything in the Big Ten after that. It used to be only one team in the conference went to a bowl game, the Rose Bowl, the conference champion. You also could not go in back-to-back years. So if, take, for example, Ohio State. Ohio State, if they won it in 69 and went to the Rose Bowl, even if they won it in 70, they wouldn't be allowed to go to the next team would go. Dennis Franklin was the quarterback at Michigan, had a record of 32-1 as a starter, and never played in a bowl game. How about that? Well, he broke his collarbone in this game, and that's what opened the door to send Ohio State. After that, they opened up the door to send multiple teams to bowl games.
We'll talk with John Bacon about that in a moment. Our thanks to Jack Ham for being on the show today. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for this big holiday weekend that extends into Monday with deer season. Beverages, beer, snacks, fresh hot roasted peanuts, pickle bar, and more. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Coming up, news on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2011 Ford Explorer Limited, only 12,000 miles, $34,999. 2010 Lincoln MKX, just one owner, $24,955. 2012 Kia Optima LX comes with a Carfax buyback guarantee, just $16,399. 2012 Hyundai Sonata, accident-free, fully serviced, just $13,796. And a like-new 2012 Ford Focus SE, lowest price promise, just $16,961. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive and see what your trade is worth, too, at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Friday, and we're about to be joined by John Bacon here in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And also, today is Friday. That means we're being brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. Stock up for the weekend. You have to make sure people are going to drop by. You want to watch games, the whole deal. Brewers Outlet, beverages. I mentioned beer, wide selection. Fresh hot roasted peanuts, pickle bar, wide array of snacks. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. John Bacon joins us. John, you talked a lot about reform of the NCAA. And I remember Joe Paterno years ago said, hey, look, they should take the rule book, rip it up, and said, okay, let's start over, page one, rule one. What would you do, and what advice would you give to the NCAA right now?
First of all, follow Joe's advice, and that is start over. I think what you really need, and this sounds a bit crazy, but this ran on Yahoo Sports about a month ago. It's still buzzing.
On the front page of
it
Yahoo
is.
Sports.
It's ridiculous, but apparently it's hit a nerve. And that is that you need in football and basketball – college football and basketball are the only two sports in the world. Sorry, pro basketball and football are the only two sports in the world that don't have paid minor leagues to get to the major leagues. High Li has got a minor league.
Right.
Ping pong, sorry, table tennis, got a minor league.
Yes, it does.
All right? And only in football and basketball, you got colleges, which came before the NBA, right. Came before the NFL. They had no reason to create their own.
Right.
What you need to really separate these problems is what baseball and hockey have had for a century, viable minor leagues to get to the major leagues if that's the way you want to go. So otherwise, you got one size fits all, one big tube for everybody, and it doesn't work. It's round pegs and square holes. You got too many guys who don't want to be students, who shouldn't be students,
yeah.
Who want to get paid. Well, as it now stands, they will still find some place to go.
Right.
What we need to do is find a place for those guys to go elsewhere. Look, you got the Spikes right here in town.
Yeah.
You don't want to play baseball for, and you cover them.
Right.
You don't want to play baseball for Penn State? No problem. Spikes are in the same campus.
Sure.
Go nuts. Here's,
right.
You know, a signing bonus. Have yeah. a good time.
Well, look at Tyler Gaffney. Tyler Gaffney, who played here last summer, now is tearing up at Stanford, decided to go back and take another shot at that. All right. Jim Delaney. We talked about this yesterday as well. Brilliant businessman,
mm-hmm.
without question.
No question.
And he said, look, the heck with this. We're not a minor league. You want to leave? It's your life. Do what you want. I'm not going to protect you. Your thoughts on that theory?
I love that theory.
So
we
do
gotta,
I.
We got to call the bluff, basically. And
so do I.
Delaney can do it because he knows the NFL and the NBA want no part
right.
of a minor league. Why would they pay money for something they're getting for free right now?
Right.
The way to force them to do so, I think, is bring back an idea that was current from 1905 to 1972, freshman ineligibility, mm-hmm. which sounds crazy, but if you don't want to be a student, you will not stick around a year to play a game.
Right.
I give you Kentucky basketball.
Yes.
4 months of whatever is all they ever do.
Right.
And if once you bring that back, if the presidents want us to believe in student-athletes, students first, prove it.
Yeah.
Right. And you know what? Penn State would have no problem with this.
Right.
Michigan, I think, would have no problem with this.
Right.
Northwestern, I know, would
have
no problem with this.
Yeah.
Kentucky basketball would have a huge problem with this. They would
right.
not have a basketball team.
Right.
That's fine with me.
Right.
So that'll force, I believe, the NBA and the NFL to create their own leagues. There is the D League, as you pointed out
yeah.
earlier. And trust me, NFL, $9 billion industry. If the Pittsburgh Pirates can afford, what, three or four minor league teams, mm-hmm. the Steelers can afford one.
Yeah, exactly. They tried it once, right around 69-70, the Atlantic Coast Football League. They tried it. And after a couple years, they kind of, because of the college football component. Now, let's stay in the 70s.
Ah, nice segue. I'm with you, Jones.
Yeah. Okay, there.
This is how the pros do it.
Okay, JB.
Sit back and watch, folks. This is how the pros do it.
73. You were part of that documentary, and as someone who was a Michigan historian, okay, Michigan has its great season. Ohio State has its great season. They play. Dennis Franklin gets hurt fourth quarter, 10-10 tie. Ohio State had gone the year before. The assumption is Michigan's going to go. What made them go with athletic directors deciding, and why is it to this day some of them can't even remember being in the same room?
This is the Big Ten documentary tiebreaker. It's been running, I think, almost every day for all week, basically. It was on Wednesday. I think it's on this weekend as well.
It'll be on all next week.
I'm sure you drop $250,000 in a documentary, you
yeah.
run it for a little while,
yeah.
as well they should. But they did a great job with this,
yeah.
truly. Yeah, you got the background right, of course. Michigan's undefeated, 10-0. Ohio State's 10-0. Number four versus number one. And whoever wins goes to Pasadena. It's got a very good chance at a national title, obviously. The year before, they finally rescinded the rule that you were allowed to repeat mm-hmm. Big Ten champions going to the Rose Bowl. That was not true from 48 to 72. You could not repeat.
Right.
So it's in the backup team oftentimes. That rule is gone. Michigan outplays them pretty significantly in that game. Two kicks at the end that Mike Landry does not make, poor guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 10-10 tie, but as you said, Dennis Franklin, Michigan star quarterback, breaks his collarbone mm-hmm. in the fourth quarter. Now, they have no real system set up, not much of one, for this eventuality. Consider this today with all the money at stake and all the prestige. And by the way, back then, the Big Two and the Little Eight, this is going to happen fairly often.
Sure.
And those games are all defense, man. They're not 45-38.
Right.
So you got to believe the odds of a tie are pretty decent
yeah.
on the grand scale. They're not ready for any of this. They decide to put it to the Big Ten athletic directors. But my question in the documentary was, what question did you ask them? Who deserves to go based on who went last year? Who played the better game that night, which is probably Michigan? Who's got the better chance of beating USC in the Rose Bowl? And don't forget, the Big Ten had lost four straight,
right.
all Michigan and Ohio State, to that point.
Who asked the question?
That's another question. And the catch of the whole thing, man, there's a slip of paper somewhere where these guys all voted, and they wrote it down in Chicago at the Big Ten offices. It's all secret. I assume Wayne Duke asked the question. We don't even know that.
Right.
We don't know how anybody voted for sure, or not really. We don't know certainly what the criteria was, what the question even was. And as I said in that documentary, man, you want to breed paranoia? Give us secrecy. And
yeah.
look, the free report and the Knight Commission and you name it with you guys.
Right.
The more secret you are, the more paranoia grows. And there's a ton of paranoia in Ann Arbor over this game. The conspiracy theorists, by the way, the JFK assassination, 50 years a day, of course.
Yeah.
Man, it's about neck and neck as far as conspiracy theories go.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously one's seriously important, one is not.
Right.
But the conspiracy theorists have had 40 years to have fun with this.
But what does it say that even Woody Hayes was surprised by the decision?
That's where my take at the time, when I was a 10-year-old kid, when you see Woody Hayes passing desperately at the end of the game to try to break that tie, That, to me, is a tacit admission. It's like running from the scene of the crime. Right. Why are you running?
Yeah, because he knows, he thinks he has to win to get there.
Exactly. If he thinks a tie does it, he takes a knee. There's a minute left. Yeah.
He pulls the Coley O'Brien. Right?
So, nicely done.
So, I mean, that's exactly, for the uninitiated, that was Michigan State Notre Dame 66-10-10 tie when diabetic Coley O'Brien can't really see well. Terry Hanratty's hurt, and Ara Parsegan knows that, hey, look, they run this thing out, they're still going to give it to us.
Exactly right. And he was proven correct.
Yes.
Woody Hayes did not believe that. So right. He's launching the ball there at the end. The Buckeye players, Woody Hayes, all thought it was going to be Michigan. And Michigan, of course, thought that too. The Ohio State locker room was somber. Michigan was celebratory. But 24 hours later, different story.
Completely different. For Bo Schembechler, how bitter did he remain about that? And did it change his approach in any way, shape, or form because of it?
Nice follow-up. This is why I always enjoy talking to Steve Jones. The first part, no question. Bo was surprisingly good at not holding grudges, which, trust me, is a surprise. The guy's got a temper, a great memory. Combine those, you figure grudge-o-matic. But not really. With two glorious exceptions. One, the Phantom Fumble in the 79 Rose Bowl.
Yes.
He had that framed. Of course, White himself dropping the ball on the 5-yard line. Yeah. That was framed on his wall in his office his last year of his life. Mm. Number two was this 6-4 vote against Michigan to send Ohio State. And the ones that aggravated him the most were the Michigan State AD, who played hockey at Michigan.
Yes.
Sister school, tax dollars at the time, going to both schools about equally. And Elroy Hirsch, the Wisconsin AD, who had played football at Michigan as well. And I got to tell you a story that I thought for sure they're going to run in this thing, but they got to make cuts. But the last year of Bo's life, he and I are doing Bo's Lasting Lessons, his last book. And I'm talking to him every Tuesday for about a year and a half. Great. I mean, imagine, you had Joe Paterno that long, but for a write-up of Joe Paterno, 3 hours, 4 hours on a Tuesday for a year and a half is a great treat. Yep. But he's getting old. He's 77, not great health, so he gets a little tired in the afternoon. All they ever to do to wake him up for the afternoon was say, hey, whatever happened to that thing back in 73? Some tie and some vote. What was it? Two fists on the table. Bam. Let me tell you something about those no-account sons of bitches.
Yeah. I can hear him saying
I'm telling you right now, Steve, that was better than a pot of coffee. I got Bo at full power for 2 hours, man. It was tremendous. And another story I knew they had to cut. When a certain AD, I'll leave him nameless, shows up to congratulate Bo about 10 years later. 10 years, Steve, about a big win that Michigan had over them. Came down to congratulate him. Bo remembered the vote. The guy shows up, and they escort him back to Bo, who's in the shower, showering up after the game. He says, Bo, so-and-so's here to see you. He looks over, sees him, turns his back in the shower, continues to scrub himself, drops his bar of soap.
Well, there's a statement unto itself.
I think so. Bends over very slowly to retrieve the soap, gets up very slowly as well, continues to bathe with his back towards the guest in question. That was his only comment on the situation. So the answer to your question, Steve, is yes. Hell yes, he held a grudge. How did it change him? After that, you watch the tapes. Michigan was still very conservative, but they started loosening things up with the playbook and in general because they knew damn well we are not having this thing come down to a vote again. Now, they changed the rules anyway. But Bo, after that, man, was convinced. Look, man, it's you guys. How many undefeated seasons do you have under Paterno and get robbed of a national title?
Four of his five undefeateds ended up not winning a national championship officially.
Which is incredible. One of your national title teams, of course, has got a loss.
Right.
And, of course, 94, there's no loss at all. So, right. I mean, Joe's lesson there is you got to do something to get it out of the voters' hands.
Well, there's certain watershed moments. I think the 94 season leads to the BCS, which now leads to this. 73 led to in the Big Ten.
You're right. And what happens with 73, Dennis Franklin, poor guy, All-American quarterback, 30 wins, 2 losses, 1 tie over a 3-year career. Huh. 2 losses and tie are all against Ohio State, and not one bowl game his entire career. That's hard to imagine now. They send 10 teams. They send too many now.
Right.
But after that, the Big Ten again changes the rules to allow all Big Ten teams who can get a bid to go ahead and get a bid. We go from 11 bowl games in 75 to 35 bowl games last year.
Yeah.
Now, I'd say 11 is too few, and 35 might be too many.
Sure.
But that's where it starts, and then 94 basically finishes the job, I think. The Penn State experience where they beat Michigan, they beat all the big boys, they went out to the Rose Bowl and put a whipping on Oregon. And how is that not national title worthy? It's hard to say.
Right.
And that's where I think is the final straw for the BCS.
When you sat down and talked with Bo, I remember this great – he showed up here at Penn State. Now, he's done coaching at this stage. And then he and Joe walking down the practice field into the Huluba Hall together. And it's like, you're like, oh, my goodness. In the end, how did he feel about the addition of Penn State in? Because we know that initially we know Michigan was one of the schools that voted no, but he's not, you know, he's not really in charge at that point.
He was not even aware of the vote.
Right.
The what he is ticked off about, and he makes it very clear in that last book I mentioned, Bo's Lasting Lessons. They get a call on a Monday afternoon, or a scheduled conference call at noon on Monday. They've got no idea what it's about, all 10 ADs in the Big Ten. And that's when Delaney gets on the line and says, I want you guys all to know that as of this day, Penn State has been admitted to the Big Ten. Right. Bo makes it very clear in the book, and he said, make sure you get this right, Bacon. Don't screw it up. I have nothing but love and affection for Joe Paterno and his program. Great respect for Penn State. You know, it's a good addition. All right. What I can't stand is finding out about it from an AD that has already been decided.
Yeah.
And I bet Joe would agree with him on that one, because any AD wants some control over the future of the program.
Right.
And what he said was, hey, man, Delaney's not the one who's got to schedule a men's cross-country team to go somewhere and pay the bills.
Right.
Now, Michigan can do it. Indiana might not.
Right.
But he also said, I mean, look, every single time Michigan played here, Bo came.
Yeah.
What does that tell you? He didn't go at every Big Ten site.
Right. No, so. Yeah, and he showed up every one. Because that now leads to the next one. Notice how the transitions are of getting schools in now. It's now done the right way because they know that time. It's funny because Penn State's, of all the additions they've had, Penn State's the home run of all the additions.
No question.
Yet it's the one that struggled the most to get in. Now it's a smooth road because they know they messed up.
Now it might be too smooth.
Well, yeah, I can think of one where it's a little too smooth.
But you're absolutely right. And keep in mind, too, everyone could recognize very quickly what a great addition Penn State was.
Right.
I was here in 93 when I was coaching at the hockey camps.
Yeah,
first story for the Ann Arbor News was a page and a half jumbo piece about go to the Rathskellers, go to the diner, pick up a sticky. And trust me, that summer people were already really excited about Penn State joining.
Yeah.
They looking forward to the Michigan-Penn State games. It made sense. Academically clean, academically strong, respected, powerful. It's a win, 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 win. Also, I learned in this lady's book, Fourth and Long, that it turns out Penn State was also Northwestern Insurance,
right,
which I had no idea about before.
Yeah.
That Northwestern had actually applied to the Ivy Leagues in the late 80s because they could not win a game, basically.
Right. Exactly.
The dog days. And they were getting pretty close to that marriage. At the very end, both sides pulled out. But out of fear of Northwestern dropping football and who else are you going to get, right. I mean, you're not going to pass up Penn State.
Because when it came time to vote, it ended up 7-3.
Right. Right?
And it was
for Penn State.
For Penn State. You needed 7 to get in.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern was the last vote. It was 6-3. And they had to convince Northwestern that they weren't being kicked out. They went, we said, we're going to go forward with 11. And I don't know if they – I don't think they put it in writing for them, but whatever they said – and they said, oh, okay, well, then we'll go with it.
And their vote was initially going to be no based on that fear.
Yes.
But and I'll tell you what, go ahead and re-vote.
Yeah.
If you don't get 10-0, then someone's not paying attention.
Yeah.
It's been nothing but good
for
the Big Ten. Yeah. And I would say, too, Nebraska makes a lot of sense.
I think Nebraska makes complete sense. You need a 12 based on the current setup, the championship game, things like that. Nebraska makes total sense. We shall debate others.
We shall.
Along the way. But he and I both have theories that if they go to 16, I think we're both on the same page with that as what we think is good addition. So,
We'll see. I think that the ones we talked about last time might well be the ones that happen, although, Lord knows, I did not guess Rutgers and Maryland.
No. I know I didn't guess Rutgers or Maryland.
Steve, I like our odds better this time around.
Our odds are much better this time around than our predictions.
One, I think almost for sure.
Yes. Yeah. And everybody's sitting back, come on, say it. We're not going to say it because it's not fair.
Because there's a fine line, Steve, as Penn State has learned. There's a fine line between gossip and journalism, and we ain't going to cross it. By the way, I was thinking about this on the way here, that you and I have had a lot of great chats over the last year and a half, including on air.
Yeah.
Some great chats off the air as well.
A lot of them off. Yeah.
But for the crappy media you guys have gotten nationally, all the pylon on guys who just riffing off what someone else already wrote and got wrong and then doubling on top of that. I hope that this book, Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football, serves as an antidote from a national writer, or national enough, that we got in the program, talked to the guys, found out what's going on. And like we said before, if I had a choice between the culture of Penn State football and the culture of the NCAA, I will not hesitate to take the former.
One more thing, and then we'll let you go. It's also in this book because it's not just Penn State. It's Northwestern, Michigan, Ohio State.
Yep.
There's four here. That's why the fourth and long includes four schools.
Boom.
Okay? So when Urban Meyer comes in here last year, okay, and Urban Meyer will get his detractors.
Sure.
It was his great quote about the game between two programs that could not win a division or conference championship. In fact, they finished first and second in the division. Wisconsin finished third and went to the title game. His feeling about what he saw from the two teams on the field on that night was revealing of what is the true spirit of the game.
Couldn't agree more. And a few Penn Staters, if you want a page of love from the Ohio State coach, which might shock you, shocked me a little bit, frankly. It's page 264, by the way. It's the longest quote in the book, about a page, because he just nailed it. He asked me about the title of my book, and I said, well, right now it's Fourth and Long, The Fight for the Soul of College Football. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? I said, well, I think you get the players and the fans on the one side. I think you get the guys running it on the other side. Mm-hmm. You know, the money folks, the NCAA, and so on. He says, and he pulls back and says, that's perfect. Let me tell you a story. Then he says, fourth quarter, we're playing Penn State. It's a dogfight of a game. We finally got a good enough lead there at the end. Mm-hmm. I start looking around. I see a perfect whiteout of the stadium that night. These guys are into it. He said, I've never coached in a greater atmosphere than I did that night. This guy won a couple of titles in the Swamp, as we know. So he says that. He says, and what did I see on the field? That the fans were into it, the players. Not one of those players in either team had done anything wrong, and they're paying the price for somebody else's decisions, you know, be it the rules or whatever. Mm-hmm. He said, but I did not see one player on either team take a single play off the entire night. They're knocking themselves out, blood and guts the whole way, and not one player in that field is playing for a Big Ten title, a title game, a Rose Bowl. All things you're supposed to be playing for are off the table. Didn't matter. These guys were blood and guts the whole way. That is the spirit of college football. And he closes by saying this. It was a bunch of 18- and 19-year-old kids training hard for each other and competing their hearts out every day in practice and in games. Period. That's it. There is no more after that. And I said, sir, thank you.
That is the money quote right there.
That's it.
As always, my friend, great to see you.
Ton of fun.
Yeah, as always.
On tomorrow, 12 to 3, signing books at the museum, of course.
Great.
At the museum at the stadium. So, Steve, a book's a book, but a signed book is a gift.
Yes, it is. And I have one, by the way.
And if you do radio for 35 years, they're free.
Yes, it's called a racket.
Show me your credentials and we'll discuss it.
That's exactly right.
John Bacon, join us. And our thanks for the time he gave us. In a wide-ranging interview. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Our thanks to Jack Ham, John Bacon, Len Barney, Josh Moyer, and our thanks to you. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for joining us on News Radio 1070 WKOK.